TSN 1200.
Colin White back the other way. Here's Tierney busting in. Tierney! Oh! Scores! Tierney blows the puck by Freddie Anderson and the Senators retake the lead.
Nobody, I don't think ever wants to go out of arbitration, player or team. So, I think my agent just did a great job negotiating with Pierre and, both parties, I think we want to be in Ottawa and I think they were looking to extend us too. So, arbitration also would have been a one-year deal. So I'm happy we got the two done and just looking forward to being in Ottawa for 2 more years.
TSN 1200.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. It's 8:14 here on a wet Wednesday morning. We had some early morning snow flurries. Looks like that's tapered off. That's good news for my second-to-last golf game of the season I've scheduled for this afternoon. I was not happy to be driving in snow this morning, but hopefully it'll be melted by 1:10 this afternoon. We've got some decent weather coming up in terms of temperature, up to 8 degrees a little bit later on. All right. So that was Chris Tierney, by the way, of the Ottawa Senators. Just signed a new 2-year contract, which will keep him in Ottawa through the 2020-21 season and 2021-2022. And Chris guested with the boys on the drive yesterday. If you missed it, you want to hear it in its entirety. You can find it on our website at tsn1200.ca. By the way, during the interview, and I'll let the cat a little bit out of the bag, Chris Tierney. First ever hole in one this summer.
Nice.
Like, come on, man. Like, he's a young dude. I've been playing golf for a long time. I don't have one. Like, that's just not right.
You're jinxing yourself. You got a couple of rounds left, JR. It's coming.
Maybe today. Hey? Maybe today is
exactly.
Maybe our next guest has had one. We're happy to have him back after a rare day in sick bay. Here is Pierre McGuire from the NHL on NBC. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
I'm battling through, JR. Good morning to you. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre.
A little bit of laryngitis, Pierre? Or...
No.
Oh, okay. Just needed to sleep in,
overall
rest.
Overall body maintenance. How's that?
Okay, I like that.
Love it.
Upper body or lower body injury, or both?
This could be a combo.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. We were discussing yesterday, and Simmer, by the way, filled in for you, Pierre. It was okay, not quite to your standards, but he did a pretty good job. So all that being said, you've been doing this with us for the better part of about 20 years, right? And I've been here for most of it, but not all of it.
Yep.
And I was saying yesterday, I don't think you've missed a couple of times due to flights and things.
Yes.
Have you? I don't think you've ever had a sick day, have you?
No, I have never. No.
Wow.
No. Same as Montreal. Never ever. I missed Montreal the same day, or not yesterday, the day before. I just, I was in some pretty significant pain here, so we're getting through it.
Okay.
Firing away.
Yes. All right. All right. Good. And you're okay. You're on the road to recovery.
Yeah.
I don't want to delve too deeply into it, but.
So.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. So, listen, we might as well go back because we didn't get a chance to talk to you yesterday about the Sens getting Chris Tierney on a deal. So, it's 3.5 average annual value, as with all the contracts signed this summer, it seems. Lower in the first year at 2.8 with the escrow coming, and then 4.2 in year two. What do you think about that overall deal from Ottawa and from Tierney's perspective?
Solid. Again, we talked about him being one of the important depth players who's got some veteran experience and. You know, maybe he had to play a little bit up in the lineup at certain times last year just because of where the team was. But I think as a team is constructed and it starts to evolve, he'll play deeper in the lineup and he'll be a very effective player deeper in the lineup.
Do you think a center ice with he and White to Norris to maybe a Logan Brown, a Anisimov can be a group that can make them competitive for a playoff spot?
I think eventually that's where you're going to see it. That's what's going to happen. And, you know, a lot of it comes down to Matt Murray and how he's going to be in goal. And a lot of it comes down to special teams, and I think if the special teams, especially the power play, can be engaged, then you can win with a center ice position like that. But it's going to come down to a bunch of things, not just a center ice position.
I know you're bullish on Josh Norris.
Yeah.
What do you think he's going to do in his if he makes the team and plays a full year or whatever semblance of a season we have this coming year?
Well,
what are your expectations for him for the first year?
That's the thing. We don't know how many games these guys are going to play, so it's going to skew all the statistics. There's no question about that. I think that's
like is a half point a game.
That's what I think that's how the best way to look at it. If you can do, let's say they play 48 games, if you can get 24 points in 48 games, I think that would be a tremendous start for him. I do.
And you look at a maturing Tkachuk and bringing in Dadonov and just the overall group itself evolving, Pierre, the support for some of the younger players and just overall, I mean, the forward group should be much improved offensively.
I've been saying this for so long now with this group, and I really believe it. I'm glad you went there, Sean, because I really agree with you. The truth of the matter is everybody's, you know, so proud of their different teams and what they've done. I'm not going to lie to you, Montreal's gone way above and beyond. They're in really good shape going forward. But Ottawa's right there. I mean, it's probably not going to happen as fast, obviously, because Montreal's more proven. But what Ottawa did this summer is just, or not this summer, this fall, I guess you'd say, it's been phenomenal. And so, no, I agree with what Sean just said, JR. The truth of the matter is they're going to have a real exciting team to watch. I'm really, really excited about it.
Yeah, and I'm bullish on what Montreal did. But at the same time, Pierre, you could understand 3 years from now where they could end up running out of track on, right in Montreal, where Ottawa, boy, this could be pretty good for a long time.
Well, I think Ottawa's setting up the way they were, and I was part of that, and I'm proud to say that. You know, you could see the team transitioning in Ottawa back after expansion. You could see how they were really starting to go. They put a huge influence on pro scouting and making trades and free agent signings and college free agents and things like that. And it set them up for about a 7 to 10 year run. And I see the same very type thing happening with Ottawa right now. I really do. And it's exciting. Listen, that fan base, and it's not because I'm on Ottawa radio that I'm saying it, the fan base there deserves, just like Buffalo, by the way, Buffalo's the same. They deserve a good team to cheer for. And I think back to it, JR, Sean was still working in the league, but you and I were doing radio. When Buffalo and Ottawa would play in playoff series, I mean, that was a nasty rivalry. Really
absolutely.
Nice.
Well, in the regular season, you know, we'll always remember Lindy Ruff and Brian Murray and the goal and Ray Emery fighting and
yeah,
that whole thing.
Yeah,
that was,
I mean, it was nasty. Yeah. And I'd love to see both those teams really have a resurgence because I think both their fan bases deserve it.
Yeah, well, certainly for Ottawa, but I don't know about Buffalo. I don't like those guys anyway. Anyway, all right, let's move along. So the biggest deal, and again, we're getting a lot of these arbitration hearings being pushed off because they are able to come to a deal. The biggest one, I think, so far has been Devon Toews, who got traded by the Islanders. Yep. They've still got cap issues to Colorado for 2 second-rounders. They get him on a deal, Pierre, 4 years at an average annual value of $4.1 million. There may not be a guy that I think a lot of, I'll say, average fans know less about than Devon Toews. Tell everybody about him.
Well, his career started with Surrey in the British Columbia Junior Hockey League. He was a tremendous player there for 2 years, went to Quinnipiac University, which is just outside of New Haven in Connecticut, was an All-American there, was a tremendous player there, goes to the Islanders, plays in Bridgeport, Connecticut, their American League team. You could see the offensive flair in his game right from the start when he was at Quinnipiac, and he was able to really dominate in a lot of different situations with Quinnipiac. And then obviously goes to the Islanders. I think he's such an undervalued asset. I remember telling you guys when the trade happened that I thought it was a tremendous acquisition for Colorado. He'll fit in fantastically well in terms of the style of play that Colorado wants to play, that up-tempo, attack-oriented type game, and he's really good at that. So, I look at Cale Makar, and I look at him, and I look at Sammy Girard, and I'm like, whoa. They're going to be tough to play against, really tough.
Is this your best example, Pierre, of somebody taking advantage of the salary cap? Islanders looking at the numbers and Colorado picking a guy off and slides right in on a nice contract?
Could be. I mean, I think that's a valid point. But I would also like to say that I give a lot of credit to the pro scouts of Colorado. They're aware that this guy can play. And JR said it best, he's not really a high-profile player around the league for fans just because they don't watch the Islanders a lot. But He's a really useful player. He's a good player.
Every time I watch the Islander games, I just remember it was like, and I've said the story many times, first of all, I always thought he was related to Jonathan Toews, and then I found out he wasn't, but that he always had the puck on his stick. Like, he just, you know, he's one of those guys that just, he I don't say he dominates games, but as it sets up right now, and I want to get to Carolina as well in just a second, because they signed Hayden Fleury yesterday. From 1 through 6, Colorado, Carolina, Pierre? Are those the two strongest overall defenses, in your opinion, in the NHL?
They can be if everybody stays healthy. You know, I was a little bit, I wouldn't say disappointed, but something must have happened with Nikita Zadorov in Colorado for them to have moved him, because I thought he was a real popular player with his teammates, and he was that big, physical, nasty guy that was hard to play against. But, you know, they traded him over to Chicago in the Brandon Saad deal, and you know, we'll see whether that affects Colorado or not long term. I don't know if it will or won't. They have Bowen Byram coming along, who's a tremendous prospect, just an outstanding prospect in Colorado. But I would say that they're right up there, and obviously Colorado, as you touched on. The most underrated, I can tell you this, The most underrated player in the National Hockey League is Jacob Slavin. It's not even close. He is the most underrated player in the league.
On Zadorov, you have Eric Johnson getting older. Pierre, I kind of looked at the same thing. Like that he would mix perfectly with the element that they have right now in Colorado.
Yeah, I was really surprised on that deal. And you know, again, I'm not in their dressing room. I'm not in their managerial office. So I don't know if things went on behind the scenes that I'm not aware of. But I was surprised by it. You know, I understand wanting to bring a Stanley Cup winner in like Brandon Saad and somebody that's been around, you know, a tremendous environment, especially when he was younger with Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith and Corey Crawford with Saad was with Chicago. I get that. I totally get it. And for Joe Sakic, I think he understands the element of winning a lot like Steve Yzerman does. You got to have guys that have won to teach the other guys how to win. And maybe Saad can do that. But I just thought Zadorov was a real important part of what they're trying to do.
On Carolina's defense, I mentioned Hayden Fleury signed. He was a former first-round pick. They've had Jake mm-hmm. Bean in the system, another former first-round pick, you know, just marinating beautifully down with the Charlotte Checkers and just waiting for an opportunity. Dougie Hamilton's going to be going into the final year of his contract, Pierre, and he's had, a, I don't want to say a renaissance in Carolina. He's been good all along, but really kind of a coming-out party. The end of the day, do you think, given the money he's likely to attract, that they'll probably have to move on from him and as you said, let Slavin and Pesci and these other younger players take over? Or do you think they'd like to keep him?
It's such a good point, but here's the one thing that needs to be scrutinized. I believe there's a clause in the ownership contract in Carolina that kicks in November where Tom Dundon has to decide whether he's going to buy the team full-on for Mr. Karmanos or not. And if he's not going to buy the team, it reverts back to Mr. Karmanos. It's kind of been on a lend, yes.
I've never heard of this.
Yes, I'm telling you, nobody has. It's been brought to my attention. Now, I could be totally wrong, but I don't think I am. So there's something that has to kick in there. That would be interesting to see if in fact, that's actually true.
So hang on here. To your knowledge, and Dundon has owned the team for, what, 2 years now?
Yeah, but I think it's been more about a lease basis than an ownership basis.
So he has to let them know by next month, and maybe the timetable changes given where we're at right now, but at some point in the somewhat near future, about whether he actually wants to buy the team or not?
Right.
Wow. So, how bizarro is that?
It's different. That's why I'm bringing it up. And so here's the situation is that he obviously has been very reluctant to spend significant amounts of dough. Obviously, he had to match an offer sheet that Montreal gave, but I would just say that that's something to pay attention to with Carolina. It is because they have a good team, a very competitive team. They're very well coached. They've gone to a different form of scouting, which is more economical. I don't know if it'll pay dividends or not. We'll see long term. But it's a different way of doing the business, and so Carolina is one of those teams to watch because if it works, a lot of teams are going to do it. If it doesn't work, nobody's going to do it.
Is that why, as you mentioned, they've been fairly, I'll use the word thrifty, the word thrifty, that Dundon has been fairly thrifty so far? Because as we all know, anybody that owns a business, your ability to extract the most money for your business, right, is you reduce costs just before you try to sell it. I guess in this case, he's giving it back. But is that maybe in other words, if he decides to buy the team outright, if the story you're telling is true, might we see Carolina go to another level, or do you think he's always going to be thrifty? Is that his nature?
I don't know the answer to that, but what I do know is this. It's gone into the broadcasting side of things. Chuck Caton, who is a legendary broadcaster, was with the team starting back in Hartford, no longer works for them because of a contract situation. He's been gone for 2 years, and Johnny Forslund, who's one of the best voices at the local and national level in the United States, he's no longer going to be with their team. So it's kind of touched into other parts of the organization as well. It'll be something to monitor as we go along. And you have to ask the question, whatever happened to Ronnie Francis? Why isn't he still there? So it's something to pay attention to as we go forward here, no question.
Yeah, interesting they would turn around, though, and then also buy out the Marleau contract to get a first-round pick, Pierre. But that's one transaction. Do you look at where the financial climate is of the world and say a pretty good chance, hey, if I'm going to get out from underneath of a hockey team right now, that it might go back to Karmanos?
Yeah, I'm not going to try to speculate because I don't know the answer to that. Everybody's got their own rhyme and reason for how they do business. But what I would say is that it's a really different time in the league. We've talked about it, a very, very different time in the league. And maybe Carolina stays with the present-day ownership. But I can tell you, I think there are other teams in the league that won't have the same ownership as we go forward within the next 6 to 8 months.
Very interesting. Speaking of Karmanos, his son, Jason Karmanos, was fired a couple of days ago by as the assistant GM in Pittsburgh. I don't think we talked about it with you on Monday. I don't think it happened at that point. So rumored to be potentially coming into the job are either of, I've heard two names, Jason Botterill, back to his old job, of course, got fired by Buffalo, or that Dale Tallon may end up there as well, Pierre. Do either of those names make sense, and do you have any knowledge as to why Jason Karmanos ended up getting fired?
Yeah, I have no idea why Jason was let go. I know that he interviewed for the Arizona job earlier this year. Obviously didn't get that job, but I know he interviewed for it. In terms of Botterill, I'm sure he would love the opportunity to go back and work for Jimmy, and he would help Jimmy a lot in terms of salary cap and all the legal bylaws of the league. He's very, very good on that. I think Jimmy and Dale Tallon have a relationship, from so long, playing against one another and being around one another at Board of Governors and things like that. So I'm going to imagine that they have a very good relationship. So it'll be interesting to see. But, I found that when I heard about that, because I know Jimmy Rutherford's really been very, very good to Jason Karmanos over a long period of time.
Would this be Dale coming in and that would provide Mario a golf partner? Like somebody, a quality partner go head-to-head?
I will not say anything about
that. That dynamic seems awfully strange. Would you look at Botterill and think, you come into it and maybe when Jimmy Rutherford decides to, hang him up, that it would also be a succession plan?
It could be. That's something to think about, too. But again, Jason's real strength is more of as a guy that really understands a cap and understands the behind-the-scenes maneuvering of a front office. I think that would help him significantly in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, on the Penguins, it's been robbing Peter to pay Paul for the last couple of years, right? They're borrowing into the future, trying to push it over the top, maybe one final time with Crosby and Malkin now, into 33, 34-year-old range. I know you'll say the window is closing. Where is Pittsburgh? Are they realistically still a Stanley Cup contender, in your opinion?
They are for one more year, I think. And then I think the window really gets a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
Very, very small.
And we see, and it's interesting, Pierre, we're seeing this now with the discussion in Chicago where they've publicly admitted, hey, we're into a rebuild. And Taze publicly said, I'm not really into a rebuild. Sidney Crosby better than anybody, Pierre. Yeah. There is going to be a reckoning at some point in Pittsburgh. Do you think Sidney Crosby, when it's all said and done, will see it through and go wire to wire with the Penguins?
I would be shocked if he didn't. The one thing I can tell you is he is iconic there. There are not a lot of athletes in that community that have had the ability to start and finish there. And I'm not just talking with hockey. I'm talking about football, baseball, and obviously hockey, but he's an iconic figure there. It's hard to go into Pittsburgh and not hear people talk about Sidney Crosby all the time. So I can't imagine him leaving, but we'll see. But I have a hard time believing that Taves and Kane wouldn't be part of Chicago until they're done.
All right. Well, you powered through your general body soreness to spend the last 15 minutes with us, and we always appreciate the insight. As always, get some more rest today and look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
I'll tell you where I got that saying. It's called overall body soreness.
Yep.
Gordon Miller and I were going to New Jersey to do a game. I think it was Calgary versus New Jersey. It was a Sunday afternoon game, and we were at a chance to visit with Lou Lamoriello, and we said, how come that player's not playing? Overall body soreness. And he walked out.
Well, we know Lou runs the league, so he might as well adopt those catchphrases as well, right? All right, thanks, Pierre.
All right, boys, take care. Have a good day.
Him as a young executive, really had a vision for him, maybe to be a general manager or whatever, stay with the MLSE. He hops out of it. And again, for anybody locally like Andy Scott or Randy Robitaille, they all understand how darn hard it is, JR, to start this. I think he got some help with Ricky Curran and he started there, but his first client was the Harper fellow that played here, right?
Ben Harper
was his first client. And now you're sitting on Connor McDavid.
Wow.
And in this past draft, he ended up having Drysdale, ended up having Byfield, and he's really just building a nice group. And if you know him, he's just one of those people that if you sat down and if you had somebody in your family, JR, that wanted to be a professional athlete, you'd sit down and understand he's just a real good guy. Classy guy, not going to BS you. He's going to tell you like it is and also is very dialed in with Gary Roberts and that whole program that goes on in Toronto.
All right. So Jeff Jackson, who is the agent, as you said, for Connor McDavid, also Connor Brown. So he just finished off the deal with Pierre Dorion. In the last few days. He's going to join us in the show at about 9:10 or so, and we'll talk a little bit about the Brown negotiation, but just more overall kind of the state of what it's like to be an agent right now
Very
in this
much so.
in this hockey world, which, like the rest of the world, is just turned right upside down.
Well, and you want to, as far as information, JR, when you look at these things, like teams aren't calling their players on a daily basis. And for the NHLPA, there would certainly be a lot of information going out when you're meeting. But one of the big things for an agent is to, hey, make sure all of your players are informed, have an understanding of what's happened in the hockey world. And I know Pierre LeBrun mentioned overnight, you know, we're only talking, what, 15, 16 months until the, you know, NHL is supposed to go to the Olympics, and that hasn't even really been discussed. So lots going on in the hockey world for sure.
All right, so look forward to that coming up in about 25 minutes or so with Jeff Jackson. So Pierre dropped a bit of a, I don't want to say it's a bombshell, but news that I hadn't heard of, you hadn't heard of. I don't think most of the listeners, if any of them, I had never heard this ownership story with the Carolina Hurricanes before. So, again, to reiterate, Tom Dundon, who I think we're all familiar with, has come in the last, 2 to 3 years to take over in Carolina. Yeah. I just had assumed that he had bought the team.
And, yeah, for sure.
He's an interesting fella. He wears, you know, track pants, never wears a suit, and is certainly run Carolina in a, I love the word thrifty, in a very thrifty fashion. But they've been a good team the last couple of years. Like, it's worked for them so far. But Pierre dropping, and he said, to my knowledge, but Pierre never, ever, you know, BS's. So,
no, and he's not putting it, he's not even going to come on radio put it, and also put his name
But he just, yeah, he just kind of dropped the thing that, that Tom Dundon, and again, to sort of simplify it, it right now is on a lease to buy, he called it a lease to buy deal with Carolina that Peter Karmanos, who is the longtime owner, actually, what it was a however long this contract has been, 2 years or whenever Dundon took over, that this is coming due, and Dundon is going to make a half the decision of whether he's actually going to buy the team outright or it will revert back to Karmanos.
Yeah, and if I looked at this during good times, it's not to me a franchise that I'd have any interest in buying since the day they've gone there. I know they've won a Stanley Cup, JR, but there's no feel of hockey in that region, never really had any stability as far as a crowd. And so the times that we're in right now, when you bring something up like that, I think, wow, pretty good chance he walks away, goes back to Karmanos. And the part of Gary Bettman, and again, love, hate, whatever in between, his absolute strength and my respect for him, and don't look any further than here in Ottawa, his ability to find ownership groups in the craziest circumstances from Tampa Bay to Ottawa to the Islanders and everywhere in between, this is going to be interesting in the next couple of years as we're into transactions of franchises of, hey, we're into some real tough times where wealthy people have lost a lot of money. If they start trying to unload some of these franchises, how do you continue to keep the prices competitive? That's been a big mandate. And when the Carolina sale was made, it said $400 million on it, but I think that transaction had a lot of debt load based on it where they were trying to attach the price tag, but I think underneath the deal, and something like this makes a little bit of sense.
The big thing always, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've been in the business for 20 years, the big thing for owners is always they want to keep the valuation of the franchises up. Like that in all professional sports, because we've all gone why are these teams, why are the television rights worth more and more? Why are these teams worth more and more? Like there's got to be an end to it, but they just keep pushing it up and up and up and up.
Yeah.
But I know that Eugene Melnyk, right? And I don't know if he said this publicly or whatever. It's like, okay, well, Eugene Melnyk says, I have no interest in selling the Ottawa Senators.
For sure.
But a valuation now at minimum, everybody's saying is, well, Seattle's coming in for $650 million.
Yeah.
So every team has to be worth at minimum $650 million U.S. dollars.
Yeah, and I've never prescribed to that, and I have no idea. I understand as a league, but especially in the National
Hockey
League.
But you want to present that, right?
No, you do. But my point is that, first of all, you're dealing with a league that has so many teams in two different countries. Where the economy's at, where the dollar's at, your ability to operate it, I look at it more like a housing market, but it's true. Now, what has also really changed, JR, and part of the base to that, it's small numbers in comparison to the other sports, but the fact that the national TV money, both in the U.S. and Canada, has come along, where back in the day, it was just based on, hey, show me your books. Like, what are you collecting? And then you try to figure out a worth to the franchise. But you're right, the attachment to that little difference in Canada as well is that if you're selling a Canadian franchise or buying, the transaction should always be in Canadian money. But that's also a simple. But the idea, at least in my opinion, the idea that the Ottawa Senators would ever be worth $1 billion Canadian or 900, boy, that seems outrageous, just to me personally. Yeah. But let's also see what happens with the next TV deal with NBC.
Yeah. Why do you think, Gary, if what Pierre said is true, why do you think that Gary Bettman would agree to a deal like, you know, this this lease-to-buy arrangement that Pierre speaks of?
He had been trying to Carmanos unload the franchise for a long time, JR. I think to the point of, and you're talking about a person that's been a hockey lifer and building up Detroit Compuware, hot minor hockey, Windsor Spitfires, Hartford to Carolina. I think he just lost interest in it. And that, when you get to that point, then you start to get a little bit worried. So
and no
that,
one to buy it.
Exactly.
So I'll take this. Yeah. I'll take this kind of halfway
deal. Give it a chance and see what you can. And now you look to this, to Florida. You look at all the craziness in Arizona and remove that, but just the sheer economics. Like the franchises that were in tough spots or ugly spots, like Florida and Arizona and even Carolina. Imagine where they're at now.
Yeah. Well, and Pierre did speak as well in that segment. He said, hey, listen, in the next 6 to 8 months, I don't think he put a number on it, but he said, hey, look, there's going to be some teams that are either put up for sale or maybe will be sold. Who knows if there are buyers out there? As you said, you know, the one thing you can say about Gary Bettman, whether you like him or not, is he has made the owners a lot of money. He has
He
put the financial house of hockey in order, maybe at the detriment, to the way the fans feel about it. But regardless, he has made the owners a lot of money. But what he's been able to do is always find people to come in and buy teams.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got a number of teams up for sale right now, given the economic climate that we're in, period, let alone in the world of sports and in the NHL, you know, that list would have an end to it. So how long is it, Gary?
Well, and you're also balancing everything, JR, when it's ownership groups. And say you have Dallas and fella comes in and it's Moxie's at Sandman Hotel. You know, when your business is operating, you're building it up, it becomes a bit of an ego thing. I'm a real wealthy guy. I don't mind stroking a check and understand that, hey, it'll never be perfect economically, but at least we can get close. And in a year when we make a playoff run, maybe we can break even. Now, obviously, I've taken an incredible hit, meaning the owner of the Dallas Stars, financially to my own world. Now I'm looking at my franchise that economically has been hurt. There's no way that we'll ever be able to make this thing work. Well, yeah, you're in a pretty tough spot, right, where that whole mentality shifts. I don't want to pay another dollar out of my own pocket, and I've taken a major hit to my own personal wealth.
Yeah, yeah. You brought up a great point about Dundon did sign off on the, the Marleau trade, which was essentially, hey, they got a first-round pick. They got Patrick Marleau and then immediately bought him out for, I think, what ended up being $3.8 million or thereabouts.
Yeah.
So he essentially paid almost $4 million for a first-round pick.
Imagine if you're a broadcaster, you're getting squeezed.
Yeah.
And Chuck Caton, okay, if you want to go to a simulcast, and Chuck had been around forever, but in the case of Johnny Forslund, those are where, and I've worked in professional sports in that sense, JR, there's some really strange things that you'll look at player costs, and then you'll look at how tight the business side is, and it doesn't really equate or make a whole lot of sense.
For goodness sakes, you've got players that, and I know they don't pay full retail for sticks, but sticks are given out here, there, and there. Like a stick budget, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought I heard a figure of $350,000 a year for an NHL team. Would that seem accurate?
My hesitation right now is that when I go back to, especially doing the budgets in Washington, you're talking about wooden sticks versus the new sticks. But no, I mean, gosh. And what is surprising, you would think that the NHL teams, the majority, at least that I understand, and probably I understand, JR, don't get any discounts. So, think of how many sticks a player,
breaks, gives away,
takes home. And not to mention that, behind the scenes, and this became a big deal with Alexander Ovechkin, these sticks, when signed and sold off on whatever thing, this is like a vault nowadays where these things are going to stay. Like if you're in Pittsburgh, and you're a trainer there or whoever else, you grab a hold of one of these Sidney Crosby sticks and get him to sign it. What kind of dough are you fetching for that?
Yeah, game used or whatever, All right, thoughts on any of that? Welcome. You can text us, 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN1200. That'll be an interesting story to keep our eye on here, the ownership with the Carolina Hurricanes and what it might mean for that team going forward. All right, we'll take a break. Still to come, as we said, Jeff Jackson will join us in about 20 minutes or so, the agent for Connor McDavid and Connor Brown. But when we come back, we'll get into the big story from last night, World Series. The Dodgers win it, but it's all coming down to all the debate, all the water cooler talk this morning was about the decision by Kevin Cash, the Rays manager, to lift Blake Snell midway through that game when he was dealing. So we'll talk about that. And the fact that Justin Turner, the Dodgers third baseman, found out in the eighth inning of the game, or the Dodgers let him know, hey, by the way, bud, you got COVID. You're out of the game. And yet he was still celebrating with teammates afterward. Bizarro. We'll get into all of it when you come back on TSN 1200. Welcome back, 8:56. So last night's World Series Game 6 came down to the decision by Kevin Cash and maybe the Rays manager, and maybe it wasn't even his decision. Maybe it was the general manager. Maybe it was the analytics people or whatever. To pull starting pitcher Blake Snell in the sixth inning with the Rays up 1-0, with Snell having just allowed the second hit in the game for him, a single. So there's a runner on first with one out in the sixth. He struck out 9, hasn't walked anybody, and has thrown only 73 pitches. Oh, and by the way, 6 of the 9 strikeouts were the top 3 hitters in the Dodgers order. Mookie Betts, Corey Sager, and Justin Turner. All 3 of them struck out in both their at-bats. So when Mookie Betts is set to come around a third time, the analytics say every time that a hitter sees a pitcher in a game, the batting averages go up, your rate of contact goes up. So analytics would say that's the right time to pull your starting pitcher. But this is Game 6 of the World Series, and this guy has had himself a night. I'm talking about Blake Snell. So here is Kevin Cash, the guy who came out and gave Blake Snell the hook. Here was his reasoning for doing it last night.
We owe it to ourselves to bring it all together and try to make the best decision. And similar to some other ones that we've made, I've made this postseason, they are gut-wrenching. You feel for Blake.
Do you regret that decision?
Well, yeah, I guess I regret it because it didn't work out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he laughed, but it was a bit of gallows humor, I think, on his part. But yeah, I mean, it's what everybody's talking about today, that decision. And I will say again, I'm going to go back to this a million times. This is not me being Monday morning quarterback or Wednesday morning manager. Everybody was saying almost everybody that I follow on social media, even before Mookie Betts ended up coming in against the reliever, it's like, this was the wrong decision in this moment. Analytics be damned. This was the moment to just realize this guy is having himself an incredible night. He's got us in the lead. And I don't care if Mookie Betts is coming up for a third time. He struck him out twice.
Yeah.
He's thrown 73 pitches. Leave him in there.
Yeah, and even some rumors or thoughts that he even put COVID on the ball and saw it spreading through the Dodgers.
There
there you go. I follow Grady Little on Twitter, and Grady said,
he signed
get
off.
That guy out of there. No, it is. We're supposed to. This is sports. You do second guess. You do go different things. My real feeling at this, though, is that you have the Dodgers franchise, it is incredible pressure, right? Until that final out or until a break in a game, you're thinking, oh my God, if we lose game 6, the pressure is on that franchise. You got a guy in there, lights out. At the end of the day, who did you let down? You let down the players on the Rays, where they had an opportunity to push for a game 7, maybe win a World Series, and you went numbers based. And that goes against everything that we involve in sports. You swung the momentum right back to the Dodgers, and now all of a sudden they end up winning a World Series where it looked like, and maybe not going the distance, but hey, that looked like, as the outfielder said, that was his game to lose. And it was the manager took it out of his hands, and they ended up losing.
That was Kevin Kiermaier you're talking about. Yeah. It went like this. So Nick Anderson comes in, who's not been as good in the playoffs, was lights out in the regular season, not as good in the playoffs, but he comes in to face Mookie Betts, gives up a double. So now it's second, third. Then there's a wild pitch. That's 1-1. And Betts moves to third base. And then there's an infield, not even a hit. It's a hit to the first baseman. And Betts is such a heady base runner and fast. He beats the throw home. So within two batters, it had gone from 1-0, and Snell has just allowed a second hit of the game to 2-1 for the Dodgers, and they eventually win the game 3-1. Blake Snell, soon as he gave up that hit to the ninth place hitter in that sixth inning, you could tell by his reaction, he knew it was coming. He knew he was going to get pulled. You could see him mouth a couple of F-bombs. And as he's walking off the mound after giving the manager the ball, you can see he is very unhappy. Here was his reaction post-game.
Definitely disappointed, upset. I don't know. I just want the ball. I felt good. I felt I did everything I could to, prove my case to stay out there. And then for us to lose, it sucks.
So our TSN 1200 and 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question, because the talk has gone now from that decision to kind of the bigger picture issue of the use of analytics in sports. And, we obviously have a lot of hockey fans, and we have seen how the rise in the usage of analytics in the National Hockey League. Some teams are all in on it. They have huge analytics departments, including the Toronto Maple Leafs. Seattle has gone big on analytics. Almost every team has at least something.
Yeah, yeah.
Some have a very, limited use of it, including the Ottawa Senators. But The debate is out there out there amongst fans, most certainly, and certainly within some teams what's the right mix of using analytics? Our question is this: how much do you believe in the use of analytics in sports? Are you 100% all in? Doesn't mean that every decision comes, but are you 100% a believer in analytics? Are you 50%, or are you, we'll say old school?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? Let's do it the way we've always done it. Do it with the eye test and the gut.
Yeah, and to me, I'm 50-50, and I guess I don't even mean in, I believe in it, but the application of a JR, and I'm going to ask you because I don't know, like, I totally understand the analytics, and I think Vegas used it, and they built a real nice product in a hurry. But what I guess I don't really know is that, like, is this carrying over to the National Hockey League? Are they using that much of it in-game? Like, personnel recognition and scouting, matching up with your reports, I understand that, or breaking down your opponent. But it's not used like baseball is in-game, is it?
Well, I was just going to look it up here. I'm looking it up as I'm talking
okay,
to you.
Yeah.
Because there's a fellow, speaking of Carolina, so they're also a big analytics team.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a fellow, and one of the kind of the leading cutting edge guys on hockey analytics is a guy by the name of Eric Tulsky, who was signed, one of the early big analytics guys to sign with an NHL team.
Yeah, yeah.
So he went from, and I don't remember what his title is, and I'm trying to look it up right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has, his title right now is like vice president of, maybe Hammer, you can look it up, T-U-L-S-K-Y.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Vice President, he's got some highfalutin title, which basically says, yeah, Rod Brind'Amour is the coach, but this guy is walking into Rod Brind'Amour's office before the game and saying, okay, this, and this is likely to happen tonight. So when you're making your decisions on the game tonight, remember all of this stuff.
Yeah, and hockey matchups have been around forever, JR. Now, part of it, whether you're the home or the road team, I can understand that. I just wonder, but I understand where, hey, when it comes to now, part of my bit of an old school mentality would look at Carolina and understand, okay, analytics on the players that you've drafted, that you've traded for. If I put a bunch of smart and good players together, how do I break that down? But really, yeah, I'd be more interested on where I totally understand with baseball when you get into a lot of the raw data, certain numbers. But, as I say, hockey is such a different filter. There's so much more free-flowing where baseball, the situational part of it in the baseball season, that situation you're in is probably done 1,000 times by other teams, right? Where hockey, it's really hard to quantify or to ever look at two situations exact.
There is an element of randomness in hockey, right?
Well, very much so.
Whereas baseball, first of all, because we have stops and starts in baseball, right? Every single pitch is a new thing.
Yeah.
Whereas hockey, it's like it's all, nothing is the same. Now there are elements that you bring in that are zone exits and all that. Other. Yeah. By the way, his title is Vice President of Hockey Management and Strategy.
Nice.
Vice President of Hockey Management and Strategy is that guy's title in
Excellent
Carolina.
Chess player. what would also be interesting, because in baseball, I'm not saying that during a game guys don't get worn down a little bit, but a pitcher obviously is the obvious on his arm. Like the fatigue level that you're dealing with, especially in hockey and basketball, when you get into it, and that's a theory I certainly believe in, like just much like a pitch count, certain players, when they max out on an ice time factor, JR,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
That is a big thing to follow, and understanding for whatever reason, physically, mentally, that certain players can only handle a certain amount of minutes. Somebody go over that is a disaster.
Yeah, I guess my question would be, if we're talking about if the biggest reason that they took out Blake Snell last night was, the numbers show that the third time that you're facing a hitter in a given game, the numbers against you go up and up and up. So that's, the numbers overall would say, hey, this is the time to pull this guy, even if he's having a great game.
Yeah, yeah.
My question would be, does that pertain to every single pitcher? Like, obviously, some guys are power arms. Some guys are built to throw. Like, he's only at 73 pitches. Some guys are built to throw, 100 to 110 pitches in a game. If Blake Snell has only thrown 50 pitches as opposed to 80 pitches by the time he reaches Mookie Betts for the third time, does that come into the thinking?
Well,
or is it just a blanket? Third time through the order, boom, he's out.
And let's also face some facts here. This isn't the middle of the regular season. This player is not, and I'm not going to hurt him, but he's not pitching again for, another 4 or 5 months? Like this is his last opportunity. The guy is just in an absolute zone. It looks absolutely foolish that you'd make the decision in Game 6 of the World Series.
Right. So, anyway, it certainly is a big talking point. Got a lot of people talking, not just about what went on last night, but just, again, the prevalence and use and about analytics in sports and its place. It's certainly a really interesting debate. We'll take a break. Just past 9 o'clock, the latest news and a scoreboard rundown, including the details on the Dodgers win. And we're going to come back and talk with Jeff Jackson, player agent for Connor McDavid and Connor Brown, amongst others, about where we're at in terms of this crazy hockey world we're in right now. We'll talk to him next on TSN 1200.